Senator Young votes against the infrastructure bill. House Republicans hire a redistricting consultant, plus COVID disrupting the start of the school year, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 13th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana U.S. Senator Todd Young voted against the bipartisan federal infrastructure bill when it came up for a vote in the Senate. The current version of the measure would send billions of dollars to Indiana for, among other things, highway improvements and bridge repairs, public transportation, and broadband. Republican Senator Todd Young says he's not comfortable that enough of the bill is paid for and would add too greatly to the national debt. He also expressed discomfort at the insistence of some Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, to tie passage of the infrastructure bill to a larger budget package. Young does say he hopes to continue working on the measure as it moves to the House. Indiana's other U.S. Senator, Republican Mike Braun, has decried the bill as a debt bomb. Indiana Democrats say the measure will deliver investments that Hoosiers need, and they note Young was supportive of the 2017 federal tax cuts, which many economists say added significantly to the deficit.
What impact will Young's vote have with his constituents? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. You may notice if you're watching, and you may notice if you're listening, that we are back to being virtual as we record the show this week, as the station here at WFYI follows CDC guidelines. On a related note, if you are able to, maybe get vaccinated, please. Mike O'Brien, is this the right vote for Hoosiers?
I think it is in the near term. I think you left the door open to, as this progresses and it kind of juxtaposes with the broader budget package that is coming next, is kind of the next part of this. He left the door open to maybe come back and support it. I think he was uncertain of, one, how he said this, of how it's being paid for, and it's classic like DC Democrats, how they're it's all smoke and mirrors on how it's actually going to be paid for. And then they're, in the end, they, rather than do a true bipartisan package, there's a lot of handouts for labor. There's $100 billion in transit for the coast, you know, that Indiana's never going to see and ultimately going to pay for. So I think for those reasons, he was uncomfortable with supporting it at this moment. I think, you know, I think if you're just talking about, you know, how are Hoosiers going to react? I think Hoosiers are used to what we did in Indiana, which was an honest transportation package where we raised gas tax to honestly pay for it. And we need to be mindful of that and remind Hoosiers that when it came time to spend $25 billion on infrastructure in Indiana, the Republicans put a package together that was honestly and completely paid for.
Ann Delaney, the bill isn't entirely paid for. Todd Young noted that he doesn't think the CBO estimate is correct, that it doesn't count all the things that will pay for the bill, but he said not enough of it was paid for. Do you think Hoosiers agree?
I think Todd Young is being disingenuous with voters, okay? He's not concerned about the budget, about deficits at all when he's cutting taxes for corporations and for rich people, okay? He's not worried about how that's paid for. He's only worried about it when some program would put substantial investment in an infrastructure in a state like ours, which desperately needs it. And, you know, I had expected more of him. I thought he was going to be a Republican in the mold of Richard Lugar, and he's not. He was all for this bill, knowing exactly what was at stake all the way along. The only thing that changed is that Donald Trump said he wouldn't endorse any Republican who voted for it. And he did the pledge just like the rest of the Republicans. He's so afraid of Donald Trump that he lets Donald Trump control his vote. And I expected more of him, particularly when he was so in favor of this at the beginning. So I'm disappointed in that. In terms of what it does for Indiana, I think the measure is going to pass anyway. So we're going to get the benefit of it despite our two senators and their concern about the budget deficit, which, you know, remember when we cut taxes under Trump for the corporations and rich people, it was going to result in, you know, the deficit actually shrinking. And guess what? That never happened. It never does.
Nikki Kelly, to the point that Ann just made, which is the idea of if this bill becomes law anyway, if Indiana sees the benefits of all of the spending that's in the bill, will it matter then to Hoosiers how Todd Young and Mike Braun voted?
Probably not. I mean, in the end, this is, you know, a pretty basic infrastructure bill. I don't think anyone's going to remember 8 years from now, you know, who voted on what. I do think Mike's point earlier about, you know, paying for it is fair, but Republicans made clear federally that they weren't interested in a gas tax increase, and that would have paid for it. So when they take, you know, a huge, the only revenue-raising measure basically off the table, then it's hard not to have a, quote, debt bomb. And to be fair, every bill they passed almost lately is a debt bomb. It's just whether you approve of it or not is whether you like what it's funding.
John Schwanes, we've focused today on the show about really Todd Young and his decision not to vote for the bill. Mike Braun had been clearer earlier that it sounded like he was never going to vote for this bill. Well, Mike pointed out that Todd Young has certainly left the door open if things change. Does that tell us a little bit about what kind of Senator Todd Young is and what kind of Senator Mike Braun is?
Yeah, I think that's certainly what we could have predicted. There was no way that Mike Braun was going to support this. Just it wasn't going to happen. Based on everything he had said and all of the actions he had taken prior to this point. As suggested, Todd Young was a bit more of an interesting proposition. Would he support it along with some of his colleagues or take this stance? And I think Ann's assessment, there was a line in there that was pretty interesting. Well, Ann, everything you say is interesting, as the rest of my colleagues.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Uh-huh.
My colleagues as well. But Ann made a point that she had thought that Todd Young was going to be someone in the mold of Richard Lugar, somebody who was moderate. And in fact, I think that was a fairly widely held assessment by Democrats in Indiana. Maybe wishful thinking, maybe it's just the comparison to Mike Braun. He looks that way. But he had taken several stances, as you'll recall, in the past, say, 12 months, that might have raised some eyebrows among conservative Republicans. So to me, this is an assessment perhaps of saying, where is my weakness? It's not shoring up support among middle of the voters or crossover voters from Democrats. I need to make sure I'm never hit from the right and primaried from somebody who tries to portray me as too liberal for the Indiana Republican Party in the 21st century. So to me, that's the calculation. He had maybe been tacking in a moderate way, as Ann suggests, and maybe he feels the need to send a signal to his conservative base that he's still one of them.
All right. Well, redistricting reform advocates aren't happy about the national Republican lawyer the Indiana House GOP hired to consult on redistricting. House Republicans are working with Washington, D.C. attorney Jason Torchinsky.
House Republicans point out that redistricting is a complex process with a web of federal laws and court rulings that determine which legislative maps are legal. Common Cause Indiana's Julia Vaughn says there's nothing wrong with getting advice, but she argues Torchinsky and his firm have long fought to uphold unfair maps.
This is like the state has appointed someone who's convicted of arson to be the fire marshal.
House Republicans insist no outside person or group will help draw the actual maps, but Vaughn says that doesn't really matter.
He's obviously going to be called upon to weigh in on whether packed and cracked districts violate the Voting Rights Act.
Lawmakers will unveil their new maps next month.
Ann Delaney, what's wrong with hiring an attorney to provide advice for what is a complex legal process?
Well, to begin with, Brandon, it's not a complex legal process. Unless they come up with maps that say on the face of them, these are racist maps, the court's not going to get involved, okay? And what they're doing is they're using taxpayer money to pay this lawyer, who, by the way, if you look back at his family tree, is probably a descendant of Eldridge Gerry, because he obviously knows all about gerrymandering. That's all he does. In fact, he founded a not-for-profit to oppose outside map drawing by independent entities. So they're paying him $1,300 an hour of taxpayer money. And what they're doing by hiring him is not to get advice on complex legal issues. What they're doing is allowing him to help them shape the maps and do it with the shield of work product and attorney-client privilege. Everything they send him is going to have privileged communication written all over it so that it can't be disclosed to anybody else. That's what this is all about, so that these Republicans in the supermajority can pick the voters they want as opposed to the voters voting for them. It is a classic example of using, in fact, when they did this in 2010, they used party money to do it. This time they're using taxpayer money to do it. $1,300 an hour to have somebody who specializes in gerrymandering help them draw the maps. What does that tell you?
Mike O'Brien, the House Republicans said in a statement they have not and will not contract with any outside person or organization to actually draw the maps or get data. Does that logically follow when you consider this contract with this attorney?
No.
$1,300 an hour, those were Andolini rates. look, I think you've...
Well, I hope you aspire to them someday, Mike.
I certainly do. I don't think there's anything wrong with hiring outside counsel. So you got somebody, especially someone with a national perspective who's been through this, who's been through this before and understands what other states have done and what's acceptable and what isn't. We might actually do this more often as we're passing legislation, as we're watching the federal courts this week spike a few more Indiana laws. Maybe we should have an outside counsel permanently on retainer to tell us that. The problem Democrats have in redistricting generally is we have 88% of local elected officials are Republicans. We have 64% of mayors. The governor won 70% of the vote in re-election. The Democrat nominee for governor in 2020 law came in third place in a third of the counties in the state. This is a Republican state, deeply. Heavily.
Okay.
They will be fair.
You
were never going to be okay with anyone who was hired or brought in to have any conversation about this. Let me spoil the outcome. You're not going to be happy with the maps they draw.
Well, no kidding. And we're not going to get to see them in advance of them going into law either.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about that issue in a second. But John Schwanes, I want to ask you to exactly what Mike O'Brien just said. If House Republicans had hired any outside person to consult on any issue as it related to redistricting, were Democrats always going to be upset?
I assume so. And in fact, if this were done in reverse and Democrats were in control and they were drawing maps, I'm sure Republicans would be screaming foul if, in fact, Democrats reached for outside counsel, which presumably they would do with Todd Rokita in the Attorney General's office. But... you know, it's so much of this is to be expected. I guess I'm not surprised, A, that they would get outside counsel. In fact, I'm more surprised that they would make this pledge not to rely on any third party for data or for map drawing. I mean, really, it's sort of a distinction. There's no difference there. I mean, if you have the expertise in the counsel at hand, you might as well take advantage, because we all know the outcome, I think. You know, Mike's right. This is so predictable, this whole process and the outcome. Let me know when there's a surprise, and I'll respond to that. But
all right.
Okay, so $1,300 an hour to somebody who's made a professional career of gerrymandering doesn't bother you at all, I guess, huh?
I did not say it. This isn't a matter of whether it bothers me. A lot of things bother me that I don't necessarily talk about.
Well, it didn't sound like it, John.
I'm saying I'm just asking the political realities of it. I don't think there's any illegal, and it's going to happen whether I'm off the hook, complain or not.
All right, Nikki, I want to ask you this last question, which Ann just asked if the hiring of this particular attorney bothers John. Nikki, I'll ask you, do you think it bothers Hoosiers?
The majority of Hoosiers don't have any idea who Jason Chorchinsky is or care, frankly. You know, this is my third redistricting process I've covered in Indiana. outside consultants are always hired. Obviously, the $1,300 an hour price tag is a little higher than I'm used to seeing. But, you know, I didn't expect any different.
All right. Indiana schools are reporting hundreds of new student cases of COVID-19, with some only days into a new academic year. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay explains it's disrupting classrooms and extracurricular activities across the state.
According to the Indiana Department of Health's COVID-19 dashboard, Hoosier schools have reported more than 300 new cases in the last week alone. In Anderson, entire classrooms of elementary school students have been forced to quarantine. And in southern Indiana, a high school football game was canceled because of the number of players in quarantine. The outbreaks, combined with the latest guidance from the CDC, are prompting some schools to revisit mask policies. But others have yet to change course, including a charter school in Monroe County defying a mask mandate from local officials.
John Schwanes, we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about quote-unquote learning loss and the setbacks that students and parents and teachers have suffered over the last 18 months. Are we now facing what would then be the third school year in a row in which students potentially fall behind because of COVID-19 disruptions?
Yeah, you know, I've always been a fan of Bill Murray, and I've liked the movie Groundhog Day, but I never thought I'd have to live the movie in a, such a serious and painful fashion for school kids across the state. It does seem that we are in this, you know, bad case of repeat. And you'd think at some point we would have learned some lessons along the way. We would have had a greater vaccination rate. I have to assume that as more private employers are requiring this, more public employers are requiring it. You know, there aren't as many handcuffs on schools in the state of Indiana as there are in some other states where, you know, they have no options. The General Assembly's already told them what they can and can't do. And that's to a certain extent here, but a little more wiggle room here. Let's hope not. Let's hope that this is not year three.
Nikki Kelly, lawmakers obviously spent a lot of time this last session talking about the issue of learning loss, and they also spent a lot of money to help schools with that, as well as all the federal money that's coming to schools to help with learning loss. But are we, I mean, obviously none of that was a mistake, but are we going to have to, a year from now or several months from now, be looking at more money because that learning loss, we aren't recovering nearly as much?
Probably. I mean, and especially since a lot of schools have pulled back on the virtual options, there's no way even for the kids to stay up to date, you know, when they are quarantining for the 14 days or whatever. I can't tell you how many parents have reached out to me in the last couple of weeks, because not only are most schools doing mask optional, they've also reverted back on other things. There aren't any plexiglass barriers. They've moved from individual desks back to group settings at tables. It seems like we're going from one extreme to the other to me, where we did everything last year and now we're doing nothing. And I just, people are really frustrated.
Mike O'Brien, we're seeing, to the point Nikki just raised, the response from the state right now in terms of schools is every school is on their own in terms of the decisions that they want to make for that school and that school district. I'll ask, I suppose, this first question, which is that the right policy considering how bad the spread is in literally every corner of the state?
Or handle in every other decision, right? It's decentralized. It's based on unique local conditions on the ground and for superintendents to make those calls. It wasn't necessarily unlike how we, you know, where we started in all this in March of 2020. I mean, look, the main problem here is, you know, I'll use Josh O'Brien as an example. He went all year last year without being quarantined for contact tracing or having to test and positive or any of that. He lasted 3 days in high school. The reason for that is because he's vaccinated. A lot of those kids are vaccinated. And we're all potentially carrying this. It is going to spread at very high rates. We're no longer in the you might not get COVID in your life part of this. Everyone is going to get this, whether you know it or not is the question, but everybody is going to get it. So when you're vaccinated and you're carrying it, you're infecting far more people than you would have a year ago, because the protocols are different. And that's not necessarily a catastrophic thing. If people do what they should do, which is get vaccinated and go on with, we all can go on with life.
To Mike O'Brien's point there, Ann Delaney, I agree that the consequences aren't nearly as worse for spreading COVID right now if you are vaccinated. But if you go below the high school level, a lot of those kids can't be vaccinated.
Are
so
not vaccinated.
If you're a school, what does the response need to be, at least for the next few months potentially?
Well, there ought to be a mask mandate for every school, but frankly, it should have come from the governor. The idea that you're going to spike this out in 270 school districts around the state where locally elected people start getting threats from these anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers out there is unrealistic. But every school should be not only fully masked, but they ought to separate and they ought to use the same protocols we had last year, because until we can get young children vaccinated, this can be very serious for them. The number of hospitalizations of children in elementary schools is skyrocketing in other states. And we need to, I heard the best explanation of this from a 16-year-old who called into NPR the other day and said, why is wearing a mask a political issue when we're in the middle of a crisis with everyone's health? Why can't we just use common sense and take the kinds of steps that we know that can protect those children? If you're a superintendent of schools and you have a school board that's not going to allow masks, and you're going to bring children in there, and presumably a number of them are going to sicken, be hospitalized, and God forbid, some of them may even die because we have to have a political expression about using common sense. It is mind-boggling.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will this be another quote-unquote lost school year because of COVID-19 disruptions? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, we asked if the Indiana State Fair will cause a spike in COVID-19 cases. 73% of you say yes. 27% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Republican leaders Wednesday threw cold water on calls for another round of public hearings across the state on redistricting once lawmakers unveil the actual proposed legislative maps next month. Advocates say the public should have time to look at the proposals and weigh in when lawmakers gather.
This year's redistricting process was already heavily delayed because the federal government wasn't able to send states the necessary data until now. And House Elections Committee Chair Tim Wesko says county clerks across Indiana need to know what the new district maps look like as they prepare for next year's elections.
To delay this any longer than it's already been delayed could create some significant ripple effects that create significant problems for the upcoming election.
Democratic Representative Matt Pierce isn't buying it.
You can have at least a couple weeks of more hearings on the actual proposed maps, and I think get things done in time for the local election officials to do what they need to do.
There will likely only be one hearing each at the State House in the House and Senate once the maps are unveiled next month.
Nikki Kelly, the average Hoosier, I think to your point earlier, doesn't know who Jason Torchinsky is. That issue's a little more dense. But is the average Hoosier going to look at this and say, that's acceptable?
I mean, look, we're so many months behind. To act like one more week would just throw it into disarray is a hard sell, you know? To be fair, though, I mean, I look back in 2001 and 2011, I think the most we had between unveiling the maps and the first hearing, testimony, and vote was 2 days. So, I don't expect anything different than that. I really do wish they would give people some more options and more time to review them. Because it's hard to really, look through those maps and see where it splits specific political boundaries and things. I mean, you see the big things right away, but, there's a lot to take in. So hopefully we'll get more than a few days to look at them.
And then John Schwanes, let's say Republican lawmakers did exactly what some of these advocates want. Let's say they unveil the maps in September and say, we're going on another statewide trip. Hearings around the state 2 weeks before we come back and vote on them. Will it ultimately matter to the actual maps that end up getting drawn?
No. And this, I guess, was the point I was making not very articulately before when Ann said I was un-American or something, or suggested as much. But I'm as idealistic as I'm as idealistic as everybody else. I would love to see hearings. I would love to see everybody weigh in. I would love to see those opinions heeded. But I was asked about the practicalities of it. And the answer to that question, Brandon, is no, it doesn't make any difference. There can be umpteen hearings, 92, if you want to have them on every courthouse square in the state. To what end? Again, I'm not trying to be, that's not my opinion, or I'm just giving you an assessment of how this is likely to turn out.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. All right, well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy. Please, if you can, get vaccinated, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.